Hello, and welcome back to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. Today, we have an award-winning author and speaker, Jenny Cody, on our show today. Welcome to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
This is the podcast to encourage moms that have been at this homeschooling gig longer than 5 years and plan on sticking with it through the high school years. The long haulers, as we like to say. We want to help you have the greatest of all time homeschool that meets the needs of your family by encouraging you with real conversations on the issues that pop up as you've been in this homeschool lifestyle for years.
So it'll be fun to try and see if there's people out there that need the encouragement and if there's anything that we can do to help others as they get started on their journey. That'd be awesome. That's what we're here for.
Hey, Jenny. We're so happy to have you on. One thing about doing a podcast is that we get to meet all kinds of wonderful people doing amazing things, and especially within the homeschool community. And we're just really excited to have you on today to talk about lots of different things about your work, your books that you've written. You've written two series, The Amazing Tales of Max and Liz and The Epic Order of the Seven. So do you want to just jump in and introduce yourself to our listeners, and we'll get started there.
I would love to. Hey, wonderful listeners out there. Well, it's an honor to be included in a podcast called Goat. I never thought I'd be a goat, even though my main character's a goat, you know? So how awesome is that? Yeah, so I'm Jenny Cody, and I live in Atlanta, and I never knew I was going to be an author when I grew up. We'll get to that in a minute. But I've written a series of talking animals that go through time. And it all happened because of my real dog and my real cat, Max and Liz. Max is a Scottish Terrier and Liz was a black cat. And I was watching them play fight one morning and thought, when did dogs and cats first get on each other's nerves? And I thought, well, maybe when they were cooped up on Noah's Ark for a year. And then it was like, bang, you know, the floating light bulb appeared above my head. And I thought, what would that look like to tell the story of Noah's Ark through the animal's perspective? And so the Ark, the Reed, and the Fire Cloud just kind of exploded into my mind. And that's book one, The Adventures of the Animals Heading to Noah's Ark. They foil a plot by a stowaway who's out to kill Noah and wipe out the human race. And so because they saved the day, God chooses them to save the day through pivotal points of human history working behind the scene. Book two, The Dreamer, the Schemer, and the Rogue is the story of Joseph in Egypt. Book three, The Prophet and the Shepherd and the Star is Isaiah, Daniel, and the Christmas story. Book four, The Roman, the Twelve, and the King is the life of Christ. Told was then the story of handwriting the Messiah. Book five and six were supposed to be one, but Jenny's pen got out of control. So it's all of Acts up to Rome with the wind, the road, and the way, and the fire, the revelation, and the fall. And now I'm on a six-book series on the American Revolution featuring Patrick Henry and the Marquis de Lafayette as my primary characters. And then I'm going to do C.S. Lewis in World War II. You know, you might be saying, talking animals and all of that. How's that work? My books are historical fiction fantasy, okay, and in that order. And so the fantasy part of it is I look for those moments in history where we don't know how or why something happened. And the animals are the ones that I use as my agents, if you will, to go in and make that happen. So I don't alter the history, but it's a way to make history come alive and make it super fun. And, you know, the humans are clueless that these animals are anything other than the little talking animals. But I mean, this is full contact history. I mean, you got 450 to 650 page books here. So it's a fun read for kids and adults as well to dive in biblical and American history. So, yeah. So that's it in a big nutshell.
I love that. I think what I love the most about you from what I've just been researching and listening to you talk is the fact that you hit on biblical truths, historical truths, facts, and you make it fun for kids because as homeschooling moms, that is the trifecta, right? You've got all these things that we're looking for our Christian worldview to enhance and to appreciate. And we want to make sure that we're reading really solid, good, biblical, and historically accurate books for our children. So how did that passion stir in you to create these series or come from the end goal in your storytelling?
Well, I tell you, you know, I grew up in the cradle of American history there in Norfolk. My dad was a pastor, First Baptist Norfolk, He actually founded Seaford Baptist Church, which was right by Yorktown. And my mom used to drive through the battlefields of Yorktown to get to the grocery store. And even as a young toddler, I have images in my mind. I can see the battlefield. And I was the toddler that ran down Duke of Gloucester Street, you know, in Williamsburg. So I was immersed in it. My mom was an English teacher also. So, you know, my grandmother who lived to be 103, she said, what goes into the first of life goes throughout all of life. And like I said, I never set out to be an author. I had no clue I was going to be an author, but God set me up. He like wired all of these things into me. My passion for history, my passion for research. You know, my parents took me to every blessed museum there was. And, you know, so all of that was poured into me young. So my appreciation of it has carried with me the whole time. And also that passion for excellence and to do something well and right. Research is my most favorite part about writing. And if I am going to wear the mantle of historical fiction author, I better have the history right. And like I said, so that genre, let me go back to my s'mores sandwich, you know, so the graham crackers is the history, and I exhaust all the history I could possibly know on a particular book. Like, for instance, well, my American Revolution, I have a personal library. I'm nearing 400 books now in my personal library because I'm mm-hmm. a book junkie, and I can't check them out because I have to write in them. And I've been to every place where the American Revolution happened, except for about two major locations. I go on site whenever I can. I talk to every person I can, you know, grab by the throat and say, talk to me and tell me what happened. And, you know, and I just drill historical experts on this because I've got to make sure I get this right, because I have such a respect for history that if I get one thing wrong 200 years from now, someone's going to be saying, the British are coming. The British are coming. Oh, that was a poem. That's not what they said. You know, so like I've got to make sure. It drives me nuts. I find errors in books all the time. And I take that responsibility very strongly as far as the historical accuracy. One of the things that's most important to me in the backs of my book is a word from the author. And this is where I say, this was real. This was fake. This is where I took liberties. We're not sure what happened in this. This is what I ran with. Because the fiction part of it is when I put words in George Washington's mouth, Patrick Henry's mouth or whatever, a lot of that I take from letters or things that we know, biographies, but then, hey, I'm going to have to make them talk, right? A lot of conversations. So I have to know their character. I have to make sure I am honoring them. So that's the three layer sandwich. So history comes first, get that set, then the fiction, and then the fantasy where I interject the animals. Now, as far as the safety of my books, my number one commitment to parents is that their children are going to be safe within the pages of my books. Yeah. And that is something from Juan that I've said I will adhere to. And there have been a couple of times where I've written a couple of tough scenes, and I've actually gone and done a survey with homeschool parents, you know, on my Facebook page where I was really struggling. One was the crucifixion, you know, in the scourging scene. And I'm like, I don't want to sugarcoat what happened. I don't want to terrify a kid either. I want to tell it right and as authentically as I can. And I wrote like three different versions. And I'm like, okay, parents, you tell me which should I go with, you know? And of course it was a third, a third, a third. Of course it was. So I went with what the Holy Spirit told me, which was the full on version. And I put a note to parents in the outline. If you have any concerns, this contains crucifixion, whatever, you know, I have not had one single issue complaint the whole time. You know, and again, God's my boss. I'm just a little dictation girl. He's the author. So, you know, I just write what he said. But anyway, but I'm very committed to that. And it breaks my heart, having grown up with such wonderful literature as a kid and so many safe books and not having to worry about stuff. And literally, when I walk into a Barnes and Noble and I walk into like the tween section, it is so dark. I can almost physically feel darkness. And so I want to be light, and I want to be a safe place for parents to not have to read every blessed word before they hand a book over to a child. No. And in fact, I think I put a quote on the front of my website. Some mom said that. She said, you know, I stopped having to even look at your books anymore. Now they're going to get adventure. They're going to get excitement. They're going to get scary. They're going to get fun, but it's going to be couched in truth and goodness and safety.
I have a friend of mine, when we first started talking about having you on, she was looking for books for her teenager, her 14-year-old. And that is so difficult to find. And this is a kid that's incredibly sensitive, cannot talk about or watch medical stuff. Like, he really struggles with medical stuff, doesn't have an interest in violence, you know? And so it's very difficult. It's certainly not romanticism, you know, so it needs to be very G-rated, but also to the depth that a 14-year-old would be interested in. And that's tough. That's a tough kind of genre to be looking for. And so I told her about your books. And when we first started talking about it, and she was so excited. She's like, oh, I'm going to have to talk to him about these. You know, this might be perfect, because it does it. You know, it's going to have the depth. It's going to have the adventure that's appropriate, but also omitting the stuff that's not needed, you know? And so what kind of age groups are you mostly geared towards? Does it go into teenage years?
Oh, yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny, when I first started writing the series, by the way, it does say two series, and I'm going to explain that in a minute, but it's the same characters all the way through. Mm-hmm. I'll explain the difference in a minute. I started The Ark, the Ring, and the Fire Cloud geared to 8 to 12, but I was kind of blown away by what actually happened. Tons of 7-year-olds, a couple of 6-year-olds, which I couldn't believe, just devoured it. Really? Mm-hmm. But then the tweens and the teens and adults. Half mm-hmm. my readers are adults. I did not see that coming. So progressively, as I've written the books, they have gotten older, I think, in scope. I still like to include my 8-year-olds, but if you had to pigeonhole me, I'd probably say 10 and up. But my oldest reader that I know of was like this 98-year-old woman in Australia. And she said, oh, 4 generations in our household. Love books and res. So, and another thing I had no idea that would happen with that these would be a family read. And especially in the homeschool community, and you'll have multiple ages and families like to read together. So you'll have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old, and they can all sit around and listen and be entertained, educated, you know. And that's one thing. I love a challenge. I love to speak to a homeschool group that has all those ages in it, and I love to keep them all occupied mm-hmm. at the same time. That's a great challenge. Y'all, this isn't something I was trained to do. This is how I know that God has inspired my pen, because I don't know how to naturally do that. Mm. But, you know, he just gives me these visions to write, and I write what I see. But I do try to be sensitive to that. Now, your friend's son, he's going to see some blood. He's going to see lots of it. Okay. But it's going to be couched in real life without horror. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm. There is. Yeah.
There's a difference in shed blood for a righteous, holy cause, mm-hmm. whether it's Christ or we're American freedom.
Yes.
And horror for the sake of horror.
Yes.
Violence. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
The intent is different. And also, you can't appreciate what it took to gain our freedom unless you see what our guys went through right. and our women. You can't. You cannot understand liberty without shed blood.
Mm, that's true.
On any level.
So true. So let's transition a little bit to talk about that historical relevance in teaching our children the history of our nation, our biblical history. Do you want to talk a little bit about the importance of that and what you've seen culturally over the last even just couple of years with COVID and lockdowns and those kinds of things?
Oh, I'd love to. Well, I tell you, and I love how God goes before us, and he's there way we arrive. Another one of my grandmother's quotes. You know, God inspired me when I set out to write these books. They were all just going to be biblical, right? I mean, I had not planned to really go into the American Revolution, American history. And it was actually when I was still writing the first book, The Ark, the Ring, and the Fire Cloud, and finishing that up. And I went to Colonial Williamsburg with my parents, and I grew up in the area, and it had been many, many years since I'd been. And I And I sat in the audience and listened to my dear friend, Richard Schumann, who portrays Patrick Henry. And I felt so ashamed that I didn't know who this band was. All I remembered was seven little words. Give me liberty, give me death. That's all I knew. Didn't know who said it. Didn't know the context or it. And when I heard and I listened to who this man was and what he did and how he was the voice of the revolution and how he was the one, he was the first one to speak up against tyranny. He was the first one to say what everybody else was saying, thinking, but was too afraid to speak out and say. And it just took one voice. And Thomas Jefferson even, you know, says that it was Patrick Henry's voice that got the ball of the revolution rolling down, you know, the hill. And so that bold bravery of one voice to speak out when it's dangerous, when it's unpopular, when it's uncomfortable, really grabbed me. And he was a devout Christian man. And so I was like, I got to write a story. So as I started researching this, I would research the revolution while I was writing the other six biblical titles, right? So, I mean, it's, you know, I've got multiple plates going in the air and researching several books at once. But I just fell madly in love with Patrick Henry. And again, back to my roots, back to American history. Again, God set me up. He instilled my love for Williamsburg, my love for our founding history as a child, because he knew he wanted me to write America's story. So fast forward, I say this thing really started with the statue issue, right? So I want to show you how perfect God's timing is. And only God could have done this. 10 years before The Voice of the Revolution and The Key, with book one and the revolution, came out, I wrote the introduction to it because God just downloaded the scene. And it's, they're in New York City, modern day New York City. They're going to flash back and they're looking at the Statue of Liberty. And they're talking about the statue of Thomas Jefferson, the pen of the revolution, and the statue of George Washington, yes, the sword of the revolution, and Patrick Henry, the voice of the revolution, because of his voice, she's there. And so it's all about statues, right? And I mean, I wrote the prologue, sent it away, didn't pick it up for 10 years. Fast forward to 10 years to Charlottesville and tearing down statues. The Voice of the Revolution and the Key was coming out right when all this was happening. And for the first time, I hired a publicist who, and the goal was to get me on Fox and Friends, right? To talk about The Voice. Well, so I would write all these op-eds and stuff, and we were trying to get me on, and it's a tough thing, but I wrote this op-ed about Charlottesville and they snatched me up and I got on Fox and Friends and I was able to talk about, you know, tearing down our history and what that looks like if we lose our history and this next generation, if they never hear of it. But look how God, 10 years ago, I was writing about statues and God knew the precise week the book would come out. There would be the storm brewing and tearing down statues of our founding fathers right when the book was going to come out. So that was just incredibly cool. So my revolution series launched when I think this battle against our history was really ignited. Mm-hmm. And it's just only snowballed and propelled ever since. So that actually led me to write longer books because as I saw our history try to be erased, I'm like, you know what? Okay, this isn't going to be just one book on Patrick Henry. I'm going to write the entire thing in painstaking detail. And I truly feel that God called me for such a time as this to preserve our history. I mean, you're going to get kitchen sink of the American Revolution. Those 400 books, all those boring adult books, guess what? They're all in there. You're going to get that content, you know, like what kid would pick up a 600 page biography on Patrick Henry? Zero. But you put my talking animals in there, they're going to follow them wherever they go throughout history. And they're going to learn this stuff. And I'm telling you, for my own self-edification, forget y'all, what I learned researching and knowing my country and understanding what it took. I mean, I love my freedom and my history before, but oh my word, I would die for her in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, I get it now. And we are throwing it away with both hands. But I believe, guess what? It only took one generation to found this country, a generation of incredible young people that God selected at one point in time. And guess what? He can do it again. It just takes one generation to turn this Titanic around. God can do whatever he wants. I don't know if he's done with America or not. And when COVID started happening and I saw all of this and the government overreach and suppressing our freedoms, you better believe the enemy knows how to push my buttons. It's like, why are you killing yourself to write these books? No one cares anymore about this and that. And Jesus said, Jenny, you keep writing. You keep writing what I told you to write until either I come get you or we all go. You know, results are out of your business. You write what I tell you to write. And so it's been such a blessing that I've had so many, especially in the homeschool communities and parents vacating and a mass exodus from the public school system. And they're craving this. And they're like, we want to teach our kids history. But how do you put in the fun factor and make them want to? And you wouldn't believe the comments I get from kids who are like, it was just dates and facts and boring. And now it's like, I can't wait to read the next thing and go study on my own and go visit museums. And I'm like, huzzah, mission.
Oh, I love everything you're saying.
It is my passion to write these books for your community. Oh.
I love that. It's just like stirring up all of this in me where I'm like, I want to go grab my kids now and just head over to Williamsburg and take a trip. We've not been out east yet. I think that you're hitting on so many fundamental things that a lot of homeschoolers see. And that's part of why, you know, I personally wanted my kids to have a better grasp of information from a biblical view. And that's part of why I homeschool. It's not the only reason, but it's a big reason. And I think what you're hitting on too is as a child, you were interested because you went and saw those places. You were immersed in it. You had a mother who wanted to show you those things and you were able to do that. And I think that's inspiring to all of us. You know, we can read a book and it is sometimes feeling just like facts and numbers and dates and people that we have no relevance to. But when you're out and immersed into the places they walked, the things that they've done, the buildings they've created, the statues they've made, or just seeing a statue of a person and wondering, well, why is that person important enough to have a statue in the middle of a square? And I think that what a lot of times, you know, when I was watching the whole thing with statues coming down, it broke my heart as well, because I feel like we come from this at a very similar angle. And it's depressing to see that people are willing to throw out the good of the person with maybe one little side factor or something about that person's life that wasn't perfect. But if we look at anybody throughout history, except for Jesus, there is not one perfect among us. And we can never be worthy of anything like that.
And I write the good, the bad, and the ugly of history. And you better believe, it's uncomfortable when I have to show the ugly of the founding fathers, but you're going to get it. And you're going to get bad.
We can't judge the people of the past with the eyes of today. You know, we can't judge them based on our own, what we know now, you know, what they were, they were imperfect, just like we're imperfect. And 100 years from now, the people can look at what we are doing and say, well, they're doing that wrong. And that's not fair to look at people of history with our eyes. We need to look at it through the eyes of the people that were there. And that's another reason your books are so important too, is because you're immersed in it. And, you know, you're able to kind of empathize with the situations and with things that are going on of the day and maybe understand that a little bit more.
Right. Well, and one of the things I want to share also with y'all, I don't know how familiar y'all are with my product with Epic Patriot Camp, because this accomplishes the history teaching, but also the writing and raising up the next generation of authors. So about 7 years ago, I went up to Cowpens battlefield for the reenactment of Battle of Cowpens, January 19th, 1781. That's another thing. Go to reenactments. You want history to come alive with cannons firing and gunpowder. Oh, I love it. You know, so, you know, go to a reenactment somewhere. So I went up there and I met the director of the Revolutionary Parks and National Park Service. I said, hey, you want me to do a kids event sometime? You know, workshop. I do creative writing workshops to homeschool groups and schools and on history and getting them excited. He said, could you do a whole week? And I'm like, a week? He said, we just got a government grant to create a writing camp to teach kids how to tell stories in American history. I'm like, sure. So we developed Epic Patriot Camp and we held it in person for about 5 years at Kings Mountain Battlefield and Cowpens in Abingdon, Virginia. Great program. Kids, we had about 22, 23 kids at a time. Free writing camp. And the way I designed it was to make kid care about history, you got to make it personal. Well, how do you make it personal? Well, we assigned them the identity of either a patriot or a loyalist who was there at the battle. And so all week during us doing all these different fun stations, and I'm teaching them how to research all the different ways you can research through books and museums and walking the grounds, they become that person. They dress in their colonial attire and they're John Sevier. And they're going to be researching about their character. And every day they're writing and answering a question. How did I get involved in the American Revolution? What's my story? So it's very personal to them. And then, you know, we compiled their book together. Well, fast forward, COVID killed it. COVID killed up at Patriot Camp. And I hated it because I was like, gosh, I want to keep this going. So about this time last year, my writing friend, Libby McNamee, who you should have on, she speaks to groups everywhere, or a historical author. I said, Libby, let's do Epic Patriot Camp virtual. Let's just see what happens. You know, because this is such a great program. We didn't know what to expect, but we had 25 amazing kids last year, and it was from 3 hours once a week for 4 weeks. We did the same thing, and it was writing the story of 1776. Okay. They each were assigned. It was Abigail Adams or George Washington or Lord Cornwallis or whatever. And they wrote the story. We worked with them. I did creative writing workshops. They were given assignments every week that we edited. We gave them feedback. And then we said, and these are all kids who are aspiring to be authors. And so we published their book on Amazon.
Oh my goodness.
They are all published authors now.
Wow.
And so we were also teaching them the process. This is how you get published. Well, here's the coolest thing. I just want to show you this copy because they signed it.
So
Libby and I were having a book signing in Yorktown at the American Revolution Museum. And so we asked them, would you carry our book and allow us to have a signing with these kids? So we had 6 families come. By the way, our 25 campers, they came from all over the U.S., Hawaii. We had one kid from Australia. We had, you know, Washington, New York, Florida, Texas. It was fabulous. Ages 10 to 19. And they were fantastic with the kids. So anyway, but we had 6 families come. These kids got their book and had a signing at the American Revolution Museum in Yorktown.
That's
one of the most exclusive, wonderful things. And really, truly, I feel, and I didn't see this coming. This is one of the most important things I've ever done. Forget my books. Yeah, they're great. And yeah, this is a whole nother dimension of what I do. Mm-hmm. I feel the mantle of responsibility to train up the next generation of writers who share the same commitment to excellence, to history, to getting it right and to doing it well. And so we're doing it again. You know, we're doing the epic story of 1777, 78 this summer. We're only going to have 24 slots, and I'll be putting out information about that in the next probably 3 weeks. And that will open, but it's a labor of love, but I feel that it's one of the most important things I've ever done. And also, I want to be giving this workshop of how to do this to homeschool groups, because this is a model that homeschool groups could use everywhere. So it works.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. How would you encourage homeschool moms to teach their children writing? Because I know that as we have middle and high schoolers, a lot of times moms feel like failures at this point and just want to put them back in public school, no matter how convicted they were to homeschool in the beginning. They feel like they're failing because their child is not up to snuff with writing or creative writing, or they don't know all of the literary devices and things like that to teach their own children. So what would you say to moms that want to continue homeschooling through the middle and high school ages when it comes to language arts and writing?
Well, you know, I can't speak to everything. I can tell you how I can offer my help to you. For one, wherever you are, if you go to my website, epicorderofthe7.com, I have a school/groups page, and you can see my creative writing workshops. I've got one for each book that I do. I have a couple of multiple ones for Revolution. And I go to homeschool groups and I do workshops, and I love going wherever I can. And I can do these via Zoom, but we are in process right now, actually professionally filming these, and they're going to be digital content that's going to be available in about a month or so. We're going to hopefully get them all up because I can't get everywhere. Right. And there's only so much of me to get around to. So that's one resource that's coming. And, you know, we're going to try to keep the cost low on that. So, you know, if some homeschool families want to get together and get this video content and then do it and do their own writing group and so forth, you know, that's one thing. Get to your homeschool conferences. You know, I don't know the percentage of homeschool families that attend their state or local homeschool conferences. There are so many wonderful workshops there to teach parents how to write. And, you know, not just me, you know, I try to speak at the FPEA in Florida. I'll be at the Southeast Homeschool Expo in Atlanta to do that. If you want me to come out in your group, you know, I certainly would be honored to do that. I'd love to get to more state ones, but regardless of me, there's so many wonderful instructors. So take advantage of these homeschool conferences to get to, and they'll teach you how to teach your children that. I know there are online classes for parents on how to do this, but find a good network, iron sharpens iron, homeschool communities and associations and conventions that will teach you how to do this. Because I tell you, I don't know if I could have done this. I had one son, and you know, I just stand in awe of what y'all do, especially math. Oh, I would have been an epic failure. I would have been asking the same thing about math. Think it, math, you know?
Yeah.
We're all gifted in those things, and just realize, hey, guess what? You know, I applaud you all for what you're doing to cover all the subjects. Are you kidding me? But guess what? Our founding fathers were all homeschooled. They did all right, didn't they? Their parents taught them and how the books taught them. So you know what? Don't beat yourself up. Look at what they did. And again, put the, you know, onus back on your children too, to teach them how to learn. I think that's the most important thing that you can teach them is how to learn, and then let them pursue the subjects that they gravitate, that they're passionate about. If you teach them how to learn, they're going to learn how to learn whatever the subject matter is. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, when you said, you know, God chose the founding fathers to rise up and do what they did, and he can do it again. I was thinking the next generation, and they did it in one generation, the next generation that'll need to do that will be homeschoolers.
Absolutely. I already know that. Yeah. That is undeniable. Absolutely it is. And so that's why, you know, again, y'all are on the front lines. The heavy mantle of responsibility on the homeschool community is huge. But that's what excites me. And that's what encourages me. Do you know how grateful I am for what y'all are doing? And just, you know, my mom always says, you know, as evil increases, grace increases all the more exponentially. And despite the badness and the darkness that we've seen over the last few years in our nation, hasn't it been incredible to watch the rise of the homeschool community and the resources? And that's what you call a counterbalance.
Mm-hmm.
To offset, you know, and to be the light and to be that generation to rise up. And again, how else could they do it? But okay, so pressure on for homeschool kids. Guess what Benjamin Franklin's favorite book was as an 11-year-old?
The Bible.
Plutarch's Parallel Lives. Just sit down and read Plutarch's Parallel Lives, okay, about ancient Greek and Roman heroes and villains.
Yeah.
And just think about being an 11-year-old, and that's your favorite book. You know, so they weren't, our founding fathers weren't reading Captain Underpants. They were reading heroes of antiquity. They were reading about rules of civility. They were studying ancient governments, you know, garbage in, garbage out. Okay, if you want your kid to rise up, you put good literature in their hands. I'm not just talking me. I'm talking the classics. I'm talking tough stuff. It's another thing. I don't write down to them. I write way over your head because people rise to the level of expectation that you give them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have been blown away by how kids have risen to read my books. Now, this one example blew me away. And if you go to the bottom of my books tab, you'll see a video by Kyle that he did a song about his experience. Okay, 2 years ago, I did a summer reading challenge to get advanced readers for The Marquis, The Escape, and The Fox, my next book coming in. They had to read all of my books that were out in one summer. The 7-year-old did it twice.
Wow.
Seven. Mm-hmm. You know, are you smarter than a 7-year-old? And of course, obviously, I know he's a prodigy and not every kid is to do that, but God has graced every kid with some skill, some gift, some passion, and that's what needs to be nurtured. If you teach them how to pursue their passion, how to pursue this gifting that they've already been given, you know, they're going to do fine. You know, back to how I figured out I was going to become an author, even though I had no clue. I mean, I was all over the map. I wanted to be a marine biologist and swim with dolphins. I wanted to design greeting cards. I wanted to be a singer on Broadway. I wanted to be a businesswoman. I mean, I was all over the map. My brother, on the other hand, knew he wanted to be a surgeon by the time he was 8 years old. So he's a general surgeon, just as he set out to be at 8. I didn't know what I wanted to be. So when it came time for college, my parents said, Jenny, just go into marketing. You always had an angle going. You were selling something as a kid, you know, go into marketing. And so, you know, I did. And I got 2 marketing degrees. And here's the cool thing of just following the path of to trying to figure out what you want to be when you grow up. God led me to work at Scottish Rite Children's Medical Center. Gee, what was our mascot? A Scotty dog. Oh, and Jenny falls in love with a Scotty dog and she brings one home. And then lo and behold, Max, inspires this whole series. So, but God, in order to make it as an author, you got to have marketing skills, right? So, you know, sometimes we don't arrive to the plan that God has for us. Moses didn't figure out his real job until he was 80. Yes. No? Right. So sometimes our young people, our children are going to figure out their path early and they know exactly what they want to do. A lot of these kids who were at Epic Patriot Camp, they know they want to be authors now. I had no clue. So your child may know exactly what they want to do now. It may change. Of course it does. Some, it might be exactly what they want to be. Others, it's going to take a minute for them to figure that, but you nurture it, because if you follow your passion, you know, it's not work. It's joy. It takes work. It takes effort. But, and you know, that to me is the greatest thing. You know, you raise up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, not depart from it. So raise them to love the Lord, to listen, to follow their passions and their gifting. You know, don't discourage whatever that gifting is, because it came from God, not you.
Mm-hmm.
When I was trying to figure this out, and then I'll say this one more thing, and then I'll be quiet. There's a book by Max Lucado called Cure for the Common Life. And the premise of it is whatever God wired you to do as an adult, more than likely you were passionate about it as a kid. And so I read this book, and in the back, there's a little survey you take of yourself. And I'm like, man, I was writing books about, you know, talking fruit when I was a kid, when I was 8 years old. So I was writing children's books as a child, but it never dawned on me, you know, till I was an adult that that's what I was really wired and meant to do. But God said, nope, I need you to do this. I need you to get marketing, because making an author, you have to have your marketing, da, 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 da. You know, and he's led me all the way. So when I met Phil Vischer, I said, I wrote Fruity Tales long before he wrote Veggie Tales. He said, I thought it was fine. I'm like, fine. I was like, mother didn't save my manuscript. So if your child wants to be a writer, save their manuscript. Be quiet.
Oh, Jenny, we love this. This is like, I love your passion. And I think that's the thing is you're exuding your passion. You can tell that what you have written in your books is going to come out just like your words now. And that's exciting. Like I want to go grab all your books so I can read them to my kids with them. Yeah. And I think that's the thing with homeschool moms too, is I don't know, personally, I love doing read aloud time with my family just because I don't want to miss out on the cool stories that they're hearing or listening to or reading themselves. So,
Well, I think thing I wanted to mention was audiobooks. Okay. So we're in process of getting all my books on audio. So The Ark Reading the Fire Cloud and The Dreamer, The Schemer, and The Rogue and The Prophet, The Shepherd, and The Star are all on audio. So the first 3 biblical and then the first 2 Revelation are on audio. And Denny Brownlee, incredible voice talent in Nashville, put them all. Y'all, he did all the animal character voices, Scottish, you know, he did 150 different voices.
Awesome.
The number one complaint I have with parents with read aloud is like, I have to do all these accents, you know. So go to Audible. You'll see 5 of them there. The goal is to get them all up, but they are dramatized, and they take about 6 months to do. So they take a minute. So they're there for you. So please check those out.
Yeah.
Awesome. One of the things I was going to tie back to, you said you would fill us in on, you say it's not actually two series, it's one series with the same character. So you want to explain that?
Yeah. Okay. So the first two books, The Ark, The Breathing Fire Cloud, Dreamer, Schemer, and The Rope, are under the series title, The Amazing Tales of Max and Liz. That was the original series title, you know, that I have, but it became clear that this was going to be bigger than just Max and Liz because I started developing this team. And so they are the prequels to Epic Order of the Seven. So God is building this team of animals. And by the third book, there's seven of them, and they're known now as the Epic Order of the Seven. His team is complete. Okay. So think of it as The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. It's the same characters all the way through. Okay. So don't get confused that it's two series, even though technically it is. It's the same animals all the way through. And again, if you go to that books tab on my website, you'll see them listed all in order. So you know the order. And one reason we did not order the books like 1, 2, 3, 4 is that I may go back. In fact, I am going to go back and write Jonah soon. I'm actually researching about Jonah to insert another biblical book. So if I put Jonah in where I've already got three Revelation books out, it kind of chronologically numbers wouldn't really mean anything. So that's why I didn't numbers.
That's helpful. Yeah. Well, in all of this conversation, I think the thing that's coming to my mind the most is when God places something on your heart and you're obedient to that, it blesses other people. So I just want to encourage any of the homeschool moms listening that if God has put a specific child in your home for you to parent, that you have the ability to listen to what God is asking you to do and teach and share with that child and find that child's passions. And as I've seen through homeschooling the past 11 years is, just like Jenny said, I'm finding my passions too. You know, when you're talking about, well, what did you do as a child? I would set up a classroom and I would teach my brother and sister and they wouldn't listen to me. So it kind of gave me a lot of practice for my own kids. But, you know, it is neat to look back on those things. So maybe mom, take a little minute to reflect on what are the things that you were passionate about as a child? What are the things that your children are passionate about? And maybe make that more the focus of your homeschool, even just for like a day or an hour or a half a day. Just take some time to back off from the curriculum, maybe grab one of Jenny's books and start reading, and maybe go to a field trip with a museum, a historical site, something like that. So just outside the box a little bit, maybe refresh your day a little bit if you're feeling a little bit wore down or burnout. I know we're recording in January, so it's at that halfway mark of the school year. And I know it can be a little bit wearing if we're stuck on that repeat mode. And that's what I love too about this podcast that Amanda and I are doing is we get to interview wonderful guests like Jenny, who are so passionate and expressive on what their visions are for what their career is. And I just think that it gives us an opportunity to look at ourselves and look at our own schools and evaluate those things and just encourage us to move forward closer to maybe what God is asking us to do in our own families and lives. So Jenny, where can our listeners find you on the internet? You mentioned Audible.
Yeah. Jenny L. Cody under Audible. My website is epicorderoftheseven.com. So you'll find my website there. There's gajillions of information there. Every book has its own page, and there's behind the scenes research stuff that I've there. We didn't even get to my research and what I do. But I travel extensively. I go on site. There's a lot of fun stuff there. By the way, for the Roman, the 12, and the King, it's told within the story of Handel writing Messiah. So I actually sat in Handel's composing room to write the scene of him writing Messiah in the ring where it happened. So guys just opened up just crazy. And I've spent two nights in C.S. Lewis's house and God has just opened up so many doors and going on site. So I've got a lot of behind the scenes stuff there on the website, Jenny L. Cody, Facebook and Instagram. I got off Twitter a while ago. I might get back on, but I'll tell you another fun thing that's coming this summer that my friend Libby McNamee and I are going to do besides Epic Patriot Camp. We're going to do these epic outings where we go to these historic sites and y'all can come and we're going to set up like a little program. If y'all want to come hang out and tour these places with us. So on my website, we're going to be setting up a page for our epic outings, but we're going to do one March 17th in Hanover, Virginia. Come join me at Valley Forge, May 20th or so. We're going to go to Kings Mountain this summer, Yorktown next winter, and Washington's Crossing next December to reenact the crossing of the Delaware. So,
oh, wow.
So there's, so, you know, so y'all left coast people, come on east to come hang out with me. And I'll get your kids fired up about history. They'll never be the same.
I love that. That's a awesome. Well, thanks for listening today. And you can find Amanda and I at GoHomeschoolingPodcast.com. And we will link all of Jenny's information in our show notes. See you next time.
Thanks for listening today. We hope you'll subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to suggest topics for us to discuss, or if you have any questions, find us at Goat Homeschooling on Facebook, on Instagram at Goat Homeschool, and email us at goathomeschoolingpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.